to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Stop me if you've heard this one before. Cop fired for quoting Bible text on homosexuality. At least that's the story from England, and it's happening in most first world countries soon, coming to America before you know it. It's the way of the world. Martin Luther King's Traveling Equality and Salvation freak show steamrolls everything in its path. Welcome to the Political Cesspool, everyone. I'm your host, James Edwards. Yes, indeed, the story from Great Britain, a Christian, and it is close to Christmas, a Christian policeman sacked after a row over gay rights. He has reported that his dismissal after 15 years on the force has devastated his family. The policeman's name is Graham Cogman. He objected to being bombarded at work by emails and posters in the office, the police station, promoting events such as Gay History Month in England. He faced accusations and homophobia after he responded to the politically correct campaign by sending emails to colleagues quoting biblical texts suggesting that homosexuality was sinful. And now that he has been fired by Norfolk Police Department for alleged misconduct, the homosexuals are celebrating this as another victory for quote-unquote queers, their word, not mine, over those Christian bigots and wingnuts and hate mongers like Officer Cogman. Well, this is a prime example, ladies and gentlemen, as to why this show exists. Stories such as this. We are the only program perhaps not the only program on RBN, but one of the very few that are standing up against this cultural Marxism, this politically correct dogma that is absolutely destroying Western civilization and our way of life. And we're going to be talking about that and much more this evening here on the Political Cesspool radio program. It is Saturday night, December 13th, less than 2 weeks before Christmas, and that culture war against Christmas, as you know, is going on full steam ahead, unabated. We're doing our best to shoot that proverbial BB gun at the tank, as it were, as we march forward into the future. Hopefully the future will be what we make of it. We'll see what we can do. Great show coming up tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Got a couple of great guests, the first of which is going to be coming on right after our first commercial break in a moment. He is Dr. Doug McKenzie. We're going to be talking to him about economic issues. Going to have a real scholarly conversation with Dr. McKenzie about the economic crisis. We're a continuing series we've been having here on the cesspool in the second hour. Dr. Paul Gottfried back on the show again, talking about some contemporary cultural phenomenon. And we're going to be talking to him about some political trends. And in the third hour, we're going to open up the phone lines. I have got a lot of stuff. I've been scouring the internet for the last week since our last show, and I've got some good topics for you during the third hour. You're not going to want to miss it as the Political Cesspool returns on RBN right after this. I'm James Edwards. Buckle up, everybody. We're going to be in for a heck of a ride tonight. We'll see you in a second.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Are you ready for the coming winter? Are you really ready for the diseases that have been cooked up for this year? Flu viruses, staph, even MRSA, or strep. Remember, flu vaccines are made from past year's viruses, not what's current and coming at you. Go to buyyounglivingessentialoils.com, where you will find the top standardized therapeutic quality essential oils on the planet. Order and try out the Body and Environment Safe Thieves product line. The antimicrobial essential oil blend, household cleaner, foaming hand soap, spray, throat lozenges, and many more. Use pure therapeutic-grade essential oils because they are safe, and many are extremely effective at killing any bacteria, virus, or fungus, and they never become resistant to these oils. At buyyounglivingessentialoils.com, you'll find out what it's really like to get your health back.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 post-paid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Just heard our program announcer Art Frith give out that phone number. I want you to take it down with pen and paper, because during the third hour tonight, as I said before, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be opening up those phone lines for some extended conversation with one another about a lot of topics that have really made me hot this week. So that's coming up in the third hour. In the second hour, again, Dr. Paul Gottfried will be on deck. We're going to be talking with him about the Republican Party, some political trends taking place in Europe, and the first meeting of the H.L. Mencken Club. What was that all about? We're going to be finding out about that and more during the second hour. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, as promised, our first guest, Dr. Doug McKenzie. He received his Ph.D. in economics at George Mason University. Dr. McKenzie currently teaches economics at the Coast Guard Academy. His work as an economist focuses on public economics, the history, interwar years, and globalization. In addition, Dr. McKenzie is a columnist and blogger at one of our favorite websites, Mises.org. Dr. McKenzie, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Great to have you on tonight. Thanks for coming on the show. I think we have you for the better part of the hour, so I want to begin this conversation, which, again, we're going to be focusing on economic policy and economic trends, but I want to start out with a foundational question, because it does look like the economy is going to be struggling for a long time, to say the least. So I want to make sure everybody has a firm understanding of what's going on out there. That being said, the question is, what are some of the significant fundamental differences between the three big schools of economics, that being the Chicago, Keynesian, and Austrian?
Well, that's kind of a complicated question. To make it as simple as I can, mean, the Austrian school and the Chicago school are both very focused on prices, on individual prices and individual markets, where the Keynesian school at least started out looking at the aggregates, looking at the entire economy, GDP, and then breaking it down into several large components and trying to figure out how these big blocks of consumer spending versus government spending versus business spending sort of interact. And for the most part, the Keynesian approach of looking at aggregates and not trying to break it, you know, not trying to break things down any further, you know, isn't really well regarded among most economists anymore. And in that sense, Keynesian economics has kind of passed. And in its, well, you have some economists who still call themselves Keynesians, but really they're more type of a Chicago economist, and there's just sort of two branches of that now. There are the Chicago economists who look at individual markets and think they're efficient and think in terms of a concept in economics known as perfect competition and, you know, look at empirical data from the perspective of the competitive model, as we call it in economics, versus the Keynesian, you know, version of Chicago economics now, which has conceded that we need to look at individual markets and microeconomics, but instead of looking at things in terms of, you know, a highly competitive model, they look at monopolistic type models. They think in terms of more individual markets that fail. So we have market efficiency versus market failure. And Austrians are kind of in between there, thinking in terms of a competitive process that is not perfect, but it's not a disaster either. And markets have their strengths and weaknesses. You know, private institutions have their strengths and weaknesses. They're not always perfectly competitive. But, you know, markets have their ups and downs. On average, they tend to work pretty well. So,
well, that's interesting, interesting take. And I wanted to ask you that specifically because as I walk around on the streets, and undoubtedly you and others have noticed this, people are hurting now for a lot of reasons that they don't understand. I mean, I've seen so many people say, well, Bush has ruined the economy, and Obama's going to save us, as if it's that simple. Now, certainly Bush has been very bad, but people have a woeful lack of understanding of what's at play here with regards to the economy. And before we dive into that a little bit deeper, I want to ask you to define another disputed term for our audience, that being capitalism. What is capitalism? Because I fear as though a lot of people don't really understand that either.
Well, capitalism is simply a system based on private ownership of the means of the production. And we can think in terms of capitalism where we have private ownership and people who own various assets or companies in the economy are responsible for that, and they're responsible for the success or failure, which we could call competitive capitalism. Alternatively, we could think in terms of, you know, something to some degree that we have, a politicized form of capitalism where businessmen keep their profits where they get them, but when they start incurring losses, they go running to politicians to try and bail them out. They look for protection from politicians. They look for support for politicians. So competitive capitalism versus politicized capitalism. That would be one way of thinking about the two different variants of capitalism, whether or not the owners stand on their own feet or if they go looking to government for protection and support.
Well, in your opinion, did the capitalists employ the smallest number of workers in order to keep wages low? And does capitalism require war, as some of the social democrats would have us believe?
Well, capitalists, in employing workers, employ them according to their productivity, and they try to hire them according to how, you know, how much they do for their companies. And so there are some employees and that will get high wages and others that will go low wages based upon, you know, how productive their labor is. So You know, to say that wages are high or low ignores the obvious fact that there are all sorts of different wages out there, and it depends upon individual abilities. And as far as it requiring war is concerned, that's an idea that comes from Karl Marx, and it's one of his ideas that has sort of taken root and become popular more so than a lot of his other ideas. But I don't really see much of a basis for that at all, that capitalism, rather than requiring war, is something that is that tends to promote peace. You have different nations that are trading with each other in capitalism, and if you're buying, you know, whether it be your food that you're buying from somebody else or your clothing that you're buying from another country or whatever it is that you're buying from another country, you're dependent upon them in trade, which means that it's going to be difficult for you if you go to war with them, because that immediately means the end of trade. So I would say very much the opposite, that capitalism discourages war. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why the, you know, if you look at the 1930s, Italy and Germany and Japan, they're all trying to become self-sufficient. They're trying to avoid trade in the international capitalist system. They know, and, you know, in particular, Hitler and Mussolini know very well that when they go to war, they're going to be cut out of global capitalism, that it's, you know, the dependence of these countries upon the global system is making it harder for them to go to war, but they want to go to war anyway. So I would strongly disagree with the idea that capitalism in any way promotes the war. It's exactly the opposite, in my view.
Very interesting take on that as well, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. I tend to agree with you, but I wanted to make that clear because that's one of the arguments you all, well, I wouldn't say often here, but it's one I believe that's heard, well, more than it should. One more question along this line of questioning while we've got the vocabulary book open and we're talking about definitions. How did the term market failure come about, and do you believe that it's a term that's wrongly employed?
Well, market failure is a term that rose to prominence in economics in the going into the mid-20th century. And the idea behind market failure is that, well, if you take markets and, you know, any real-world market, and you compare it to a standard of a perfectly competitive market, of a market with perfect information and perfect competition where everything is working perfectly, then that market will fail. And I completely agree with that, that if you compare any real market to a and hold it to a standard of perfection, you know, comparing it to some perfect situation, well, of course, you know, no real-world market is going to be perfect. And, well, unfortunately, a lot of economists sort of seized upon that to start saying that government can do better, that, well, since this, all these markets seem to be failing by our standard of perfectly competitive equilibrium, well, then we'll have government correct these market failures. The problem with that thinking is that while it's true that that markets are not perfect, government isn't exactly perfect either, and that more often than not, government falls much further from perfection than does the private sector. So we should think in terms of relevant comparisons between, you know, the imperfect private sector markets and organizations and the imperfect government policies and programs that potentially make things even worse. You know,
Dr. McKenzie, that being said, we're coming up on a break. Going to ask you to sit tight. When we come back, we're going to talk to you about an article that you've written pertaining to the quagmire in Iraq. So don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Political Cesspool continues with our first guest of the evening, economist Dr. Douglas W. McKenzie. We'll be back with more right after this on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Now that the election is over and the shock is beginning to wear off, Ready Reserve Foods, in an effort to get as many Americans prepared for the promised changes of the new administration and to help you and your family survive the global economic crash, Ready Reserve is offering the pre-inauguration special. Between now and January 20th, 2009, all food units U1 through U7 are being offered at wholesale prices. That's a 33% savings. A year's supply of meals starts as low as 73 cents per meal. Ready Reserve Food offers only the highest quality dehydrated food, packed in double enameled cans in an inert nitrogen atmosphere, allowing a 15-plus year shelf life. Ready Reserve has been manufacturing since 1972, giving them the freedom to offer you amazing savings. Great-tasting Ready Reserve Foods at wholesale prices. Order now at ReadyReserveFoods.com or call today, 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Hi, this is Tommy John. I may not be pitching for the major leagues anymore, but that doesn't mean I don't like to stay active. But like you, I get those pesky joint pains that come with age. So I take GoFlex. GoFlex is the 1-2 punch to knock out pain. It has an FDA-approved cream to quickly relieve joint pain and a doctor-approved vitamin that will guard your mobility and flexibility. So if you're suffering from pains associated with arthritis or the aches that come with age, GoFlex will help you. I know firsthand what pain is like. Years ago, they did a surgery on my arm so famous that they named it after me, the Tommy John surgery. Today, I don't let joint pain slow me down, and neither should you. If you're suffering from minor aches and pains, even the kind associated with arthritis, try GoFlex, risk-free. Thanks to GoFlex, even at my age, I can still throw batting practice.
To order GoFlex risk-free, dial 800-362-5848. That's 800-362-5848. 800-362-5848.
Let's return to the political cesspool and our own bunch of rebels, the political cesspool guys. So today, I'll be
standing right by his side. Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards here with you live tonight from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio here in Memphis, Tennessee, and broadcasting live to our affiliate stations across this great country via the Republic Broadcasting Network. Don't forget, coming up a little later on, we want to ask you to stay with us tonight all the way to midnight, because in our third hour, we're going to be opening up the phone lines for a rapid-fire segment. We have got a lot, something in store for everyone tonight, no matter what your signature issue is. I promise you, we have got a lot in store with you this evening, for you this evening, I should say. Beginning and continuing, I should say, right now with our first guest, Dr. Doug McKenzie. Dr. McKenzie, you had an article in which you were talking about the American government still being in a quagmire over there in Iraq. Barack Obama has said that he would take out some troops eventually. We'll see if that happens. I find it increasingly hard to believe when I take note of who he's appointing to all of these high cabinet positions. But irregardless, and in the meantime, in your opinion, should Iraq continue to be, quote-unquote, democratized, and would democracy bring wealth and peace to Iraq?
I don't think that it's at all clear that it would. You know, I don't think that there are a lot of people who have a general reaction that, you know, if there's a problem, if a country is non-democratic, then it's probably caused by the lack of democracy, and that what we need generally around the world is more democracy and, to just convert all these places around the world that are non-democratic into being more democratic. And there's really no reason to expect that to necessarily be true. My own view is that democracy, to the extent that it works, only does so where you have relatively well-educated people who hold certain beliefs about personal freedom, about individuality. And, and the reason why democracy worked relatively well in the United States is because the early Americans were very influenced by the ideas of the Enlightenment. These were people who were familiar with the ideas of Adam Smith, with John Locke, and they believed in limited government and individual rights, and that meant that democracy could work relatively well. And they were also fairly well educated and literate as far as the voting public was concerned back then. And if you have a electorate that is perhaps uneducated, that is illiterate, well, then they're going to be susceptible to demagogues. They're not going to be able to think for themselves. They're not going to be able to read for themselves. And if you have an electorate that doesn't believe in limited government and individual freedom and individual rights, then the democracy is just going to be, it's going to collapse into a public form of theft, where people are just going to be using the democratic system to vote their ways into other people's pockets. And, either way, democracy will not lead to prosperity and peace in a society that has either an uneducated or a population that doesn't respect individual rights. And I'm not sure if Iraq is there yet.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left until our next break, and then we're going to have you on for one more segment, a little more extended segment, because I know some of these questions are probably hard. Perhaps not for our audience to grasp because they're so smart, but for a lot of political lay people, I guess you could say, these are some heavy issues, some tough questions. That being said, I want to try to squeeze one more in before the next break. You're talking about big government. Certainly, we now have a country and live in a country whose government would be completely alien to those founding stock settlers that you mentioned. But and one of those things being one of those entities being Social Security. What if Social Security was eliminated? Would old people die miserably and in poverty? And in your opinion, does Social Security transfer money from the wealthy to the poor?
To some extent, that Social Security does transfer money. It transfers some income, actually, from the poor to the wealthy. It does actually. There are people in the United States with low incomes do tend to have shorter lifespans, which means they get back less from Social Security. So and they end up getting on the short end of Social Security. And people in upper-income households, people with larger incomes, tend to live longer, so they actually get more back. So in some ways, it transfers wealth from poor to rich. And, I have no doubt that if we just outright scrapped Social Security, there would be some tough transitional problems. And there are some people who are counting on that for part of their income at the moment. But getting past those problems, this would lead, with Social Security, to a higher savings rate, to higher investment, and faster economic growth.
Dr. McKenzie, just hold that thought. We're going to pick up with Social Security. Do not mean to cut you off. We're going to pick up on Social Security when we come back. We've just run flat out of time. Just sit tight, everybody. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
And people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Deep in the Brazilian rainforest of the Amazon grows the acai berry. Considered to be one of nature's most complete and healthy foods, the acai berry is loaded with antioxidants, amino acids, essential omegas, fibers, phytonutrients, and protein. A superfood? Yes. YourLivingFruit.com now brings the acai product, the timing, the company, the opportunity, and the cause to you. Some of the health benefits associated with the acai berry are increase in sustained energy, help with cholesterol management, improvement of digestive system, strengthening immune system, and more. Acai berry boasts 10 times the antioxidant benefits of grapes and twice that of blueberries. Are acai berry health benefits right for you? Is the opportunity right for you? Find out at YourLivingFruit.com. YourLivingFruit.com will show you the remarkable and continually documented health benefits of the acai berry. Visit YourLivingFruit.com. That's YourLivingFruit.com.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone, the Political Cesspool. I'm James Edwards here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, continuing on with our first guest of the evening, Dr. Doug McKenzie. Dr. McKenzie, before we ran into that commercial break there in the last segment, you were concluding some of your thoughts on Social Security, and I certainly want to afford you the opportunity to do that.
Yes. Well, the government has not managed our retirement incomes very well. If you look at the history of Social Security, the government has not funded this program properly, but has left it underfunded so that in the future, people are going to have to pay much higher taxes and not get very much in relation back to this in this from this program. And the younger generation during this century is really getting stuck with a very large bill for Social Security because it is underfunded. And I do think very strongly that we need to move away from this system. If we were to end Social Security abruptly today, then of course there are people, retirees right now, who would feel that tomorrow. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, this would be difficult for them, and that's the reason why it's so difficult to try and change the system, because you have people who are dependent upon it, unfortunately. But I do believe very strongly that we need to try and work our way out of this program anyway and to get past the difficulty of winding it down, because there are much better ways to finance retirement by people saving money, not necessarily putting money in the stock market, since that makes some people nervous, but in savings accounts, in bonds, in things that, you know, are diversified and relatively safe. And one of the less obvious obstacles is, of course, the, as many in your audience would probably recognize, the Federal Reserve Bank, which finances a boom-bust cycle and introduces great risk to anybody trying to finance their own retirement privately, that if you happen to retire as we're going into a recession and your stocks are crashing, that's very difficult for people to accept. So in addition to just reforming out of the system itself, I think we need to get away from the Federal Reserve fiat currency type of system that introduces so much risk to, you know, workers who are looking at financing their retirement and are worried about whether or not the market is going to be up or down at the time when they need their money when they retire.
I really appreciate you taking the time to offer such an in-depth analysis and thoughtful response to the question of Social Security. It would be very simple for us all just to say, well, it's a bad system. It's probably not going to work forever, and we need to get away from it. And here are some ways to do that, and I appreciate you for giving us that information of how we can safeguard some of our assets without relying on the government to give us our daily bread. I want to, with the time we have remaining with you tonight, Dr. McKenzie, I want to spend a couple of those minutes turning our gaze towards China, because China seems poised to take America's place with regards to having the world's dominant economy. Does China prove that regulated economies work better than unregulated economies with the astounding growth that's taking place over there?
No, and actually their growth isn't all that astounding. That the Chinese Marxists have, given their control of all media and information in China, they've come out with information on their economy which is unduly optimistic. They've been exaggerating their economic growth. According to the official statistics, that they have had an outstanding rate of economic growth over, you know, the past 30 years or so, going back to late 1970s. And it's simply, you know, it's not entirely true. It's a gross exaggeration that their economic growth rate in reality, when you look at real numbers, has been significantly lower. And at this present time, their GDP, if you compare their official GDP to their actual GDP, their official GDP is about $4 trillion higher than their actual GDP. So they're off by $4 trillion by their own, you know, phony numbers.
Well, I laugh when you say that, because I suppose I set you up for that, because my very next question, should you not have taken the bait, was going to be, is China's GDP and poverty statistics as good as the Chinese government makes them out to be? Or are they simply lying, like our government lies about unemployment?
Well, I mean, they're lying more in the way that the Soviets lied rather than the way the American government lies. It's a different kind of lie. You know, the Soviets exaggerated their economic growth, and the Chinese are exaggerating their economic growth. Their GDP is $6 trillion a year, not $10 trillion a year. And, you know, the belief that having a regulated system, and in particular, one of the things you need to recognize that while the Chinese do have some small enterprises, that finance is very strictly controlled in China, banking and finance and all, you know, the things that are, well, starting to become more controlled in the United States, even more so than in the past. So we actually, with last year, the Bush administration, have been moving in a way towards a more Chinese type of system, where, you know, we are having greater control over the financial sector by the government with these bailouts and, you know, talk of greater regulation by Obama. And, you know, if we want to start moving in the direction of the Chinese, where their economy really doesn't perform that well, where they have much higher poverty rate than we do, and their per capita GDP is only a fraction of our per capita GDP, you know, it's one-eighth of what ours is. Well, then, you know, the Bush administration is doing a good job of moving us in the Chinese direction. And
well, are you talking about the direction of, would you call it, market socialism?
To some extent, yes. To some extent, well, where you do have a certain amount of trade, particularly for consumer goods, but capital and finance and financial markets are really done away with or strictly controlled so that you have state control over banking and finance. That would be more of a market socialist type of system, and which is what Bush is moving us in the direction of.
Well, I want to ask you a question. You were talking about market socialism and socialism in general, and certainly there is, I believe, a prevailing trend that is pulling us towards perhaps global government, if you want to use that term, but certainly there's a consolidation of the wealth of nations. Why does the somewhat appealing term think globally but act locally misleading? What type of world view does that represent, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, a very unrealistic world view. If you're going to try and think globally, well, how do you think globally? How is it that you can comprehend some? How is it that anybody can comprehend something as complex as the global economy? Well, you can't really. Conversely, I think it's better to think locally and act globally. And that's a more sensible way of thinking about the economy. We all have to think locally. We all have our own private personal lives and our own personal relations. And in our own little part of the world, we can think about what's going on and try and deal with our own problems that exist locally in our own little part of the world. But we can still act globally through the capitalist system, through prices. And this is an insight from Austrian economics that was very well explained by Hayek, by Friedrich Hayek, that each of us needs to deal with our own corner of the world, but our prices that form out of our individual actions spread out across the entire globe. So it's far more feasible to think locally in terms of our own personal decisions and act globally through the global price system than it is to do the reverse, where if you try to think, if you try to do reverse where you're trying to think globally, that's just simply impossible. And, if you're trying to act only locally rather than acting globally through the price system, if you just act locally through some political activism, that's I think, very small-minded. If, and there's just a better way of organizing society. These are just two different ideals. I think locally, act globally would be sort of the capitalist ideal, which is something that can work, is something that has worked in the past. And, the reverse of that, is really kind of a socialist ideal where people try to think globally, which is very grandiose sounding but unrealistic, and limit themselves only to acting locally through political activism, which is not a very ambitious program at that end of the slogan.
I want to ask you one final question, Dr. McKenzie. Before I do that, I want to thank you again for taking time out of your schedule, particularly, and I say this to most of our guests, but I can never say it enough, particularly on a weekend, on a Saturday night, so late in the evening. I want to thank you for taking the time with us. I found one article that you wrote particularly interesting, and I'd like to get you to comment on it. Jacob Weisberg of Slate.com declared recently that libertarianism has ended, and you authored a column on Mises.org in response. What were some of your main points against Mr. Weisberg?
Well, I think that Mr. Weisberg was taking the popular view of the current crisis, which is a lot of people on the left just reacted to this in thinking that it must be a failure of capitalism, that we have companies like Lehman and AIG that have failed. Well, this must be a market failure, and the capitalist system is just falling apart. But people like Weisberg are overlooking, first of all, the Federal Reserve's role in financing the boom in housing, particularly that led to a collapse. And second of all, he's ignoring acts like the Community Reinvestment Act that directed the financing of the Fed, with keeping interest rates low, into housing in particular. So there's a much larger role for the government in this crisis than is recognized by people like Mr. Weisberg. The government was really at the center of this with the various agencies that were pressuring banks to give out loans to people who were bad risks. And to the extent that the private sector, they made mistakes too, I think you're also underestimating, people like Mr. Weisberg are underestimating the success that markets have had in dealing with companies that have made bad decisions. Now, I have no doubt that AIG made some really bad decisions in recent years, and they're paying for it. So in the public sector, you have the Federal Reserve Bank that has made really bad decisions. In the private sector, you have companies like AIG that have made really bad decisions. Which sector has been made to pay for their mistakes? AIG made mistakes, and they've paid for it. They're in bankruptcy, and unless they get completely bailed out, which I hope they don't, then they're going down for their mistakes. The Federal Reserve Bank, on the other hand, they made mistakes in financing their spoon, but nobody's talking about bankruptcy for the Fed. They're just going to go on. And you have organizations like the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, that are still trying to push subprime loans. They haven't learned from their mistakes. Why should they learn from their mistakes? Because they don't face bankruptcy from making mistakes. They just keep going on.
Dr. McKenzie, asked you, in your introduction, I should say, at the top of the hour, I mentioned that in addition to being an economist and a professor, you are quite a prolific columnist and blogger. I want to give you the opportunity to tell folks where they can read more of your work. And would you have any recommendations for websites or literature, perhaps reading material that people could find if they want to learn more about how the economy works and perhaps what measures we can take to correct what's ailing it?
Well, I mean, there are some sources. The Mises Institute isn't a bad place to start. The Independent Institute, which is run by Robert Higgs, they have some online publications that you can read. And one sort of classic publication, The Freeman from the Foundation for Economic Education. If you were to go, they have a website, too, for the Foundation for Economic Education. This is a publication that's in hard copy and also comes out online, which is sort of the classic publication going back a few decades for, Austrian economics and libertarian point of view. So I would encourage people to subscribe to the Freeman or at least read it online as the articles come out. So those would be the first few that come to mind.
And they can find more of your writings at Mises.org, and that is Mises. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Named after the Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises.
Absolutely. And if you don't know who that is, ladies and gentlemen, do a little research. Do a little homework. We're not going to tell you everything here. We're going to make you work for a little bit of that knowledge. Knowledge is power. Dr. McKenzie, thanks for lending us a little bit of your knowledge and expertise this evening. We very much appreciate it and enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
You have a great night, my friend. Dr. Douglas McKenzie, everyone, joining us tonight as our first guest. And, it's a very important issue. The economy is not as sexy of an issue as race or some of the other taboo topics that this program is known for addressing, but we certainly feel incumbent upon us to bring to you the news you ought to know about. And we do take pride in addressing all of the issues throughout the political spectrum. Maybe the economy is somewhat of a boring issue to those, and I'm one of these people. A lot of the aspects of it just go over my head sometimes, but I'm committed to learning more and increasing my knowledge and education every day, and this program is one hell of a resource. I learn from hosting this show. I mean, when you got great guests like that, it's hard not to appreciate what this program brings to the table, and I hope you have enjoyed it. Ever since the economy, not that it was ever on solid ground, at least not for the last several, generations, but since it has been becoming increasingly unstable, we've made a point here on the Political Cesspool to bring some of the brightest economists
that our movement has to offer on this program. People like Paul Craig Roberts and Dr. McKenzie, and there's been many others over the past couple of months that have been on this show to educate us about the economy and all issues pertaining to economic interests. That being said, then we're going to take a break here on the Political Cesspool. Much, much more to come tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to put the pedal to the metal and really give you some red meat. So don't go anywhere. I promise you, you'll regret it if you do. James Edwards and the Political Cesspool continue on the Republic Broadcasting Network right after these words from our sponsors.
Someday the mountain might get up, but the law never will.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
That's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
Hi, this is Tommy John. I may not be pitching for the major leagues anymore, but that doesn't mean I don't like to stay active. But like you, I get those pesky joint pains that come with age. So I take GoFlex. GoFlex is the 1-2 punch to knock out pain. It has an FDA-approved cream to quickly relieve joint pain and a doctor-approved vitamin that will guard your mobility and flexibility. So if you're suffering from pains associated with arthritis or the aches that come with age, GoFlex will help you. I know firsthand what pain is like. Years ago, they did a surgery on my arm so famous that they named it after me, the Tommy John surgery. Today, I don't let joint pain slow me down, and neither should you. If you're suffering from minor aches and pains, even the kind associated with arthritis, try GoFlex, risk-free. Thanks to GoFlex, even at my age, I can still throw batting practice.
To order GoFlex risk-free, dial 800-362-5848. That's 800-362-5848. 800-362-5848.
Go to drinkjujube.com. That's drinkjujube.com. And find out what two dangers you really do face today and how drinking the juice of the jujube fruit protects you against both. The jujube fruit has been used in Chinese medicine for almost 4,000 years. At drinkjujube.com, find out why thousands of people, including football star John Elway, featured there in a CBS TV interview, are drinking every day the energizing juice of the powerful, concentrated, free radical-fighting nutritional drink of jujube, plus seven other highly acclaimed fruits and berries, 12 essential vitamins, and 68 minerals, all in highly absorbable, bio-ready, convenient one-ounce servings. In today's fast-paced, stressful, toxin-filled environments, you need the extra edge to stay that cut above. DrinkJujube.com.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
And now let's return to the Political Cesspool.
Welcome back to the show, everyone, as we blitz through this first hour on this cold December evening. James Edwards here with you. You just heard from our first guest, Dr. Doug McKenzie. Much, much more to come tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So don't fall asleep on me. And I got a story here for you in this quick segment before we wrap up the first hour. Did you hear? I saw this on TV. I also read about it in the USA Today. George Bush has found his new home. And he has proven again that he is just another hypocrite when it comes to race. A couple of years ago, in one of Sam Dixon's many appearances on this show, he said, and I agree, that George Bush is the perfect example of jumped-up white trash. The country is facing the biggest economic crisis since the 1930s because, in part, George Bush pushed the idea that asking people for a down payment on a home was racially discriminatory, keeping black and brown people from realizing the American dream, he said. Actually, it was simply common sense because people who don't have the discipline to save enough money for a down payment on our home are unlikely to have the discipline it takes to make a hefty mortgage payment each and every month for the next 360 months. But Bush said that down payments were racist, so they had to go. And now we're in the middle of an economic meltdown. How's that for the exclamation point coming on the end of a discussion of the economy? That's how I feel about it. But now Bush is leaving the White House. So you'd think he'd demonstrate his love of diversity and appreciation of non-whites that by moving into a neighborhood that, quote-unquote, looks like America. But is he? No, of course not. Even knowing he'll be surrounded by Secret Service agents for the rest of his life, Bush has no desire to experience the rich diversity that he's helped bring to thousands of small towns by refusing to enforce the borders. He and his wife just bought a $3 million house in Dallas. Dallas, Texas, of course, is becoming more and more Mexican, but Bush won't have to worry about that. The house is located at 10141 Daria Place in the Preston Hollow area of North Dallas, which is pretty much nothing but rich white folks. And that's the way the folks in Preston Hollow like it. Thank you very much. In fact, up until a mere 8 years ago, the Neighborhood Association prohibited black and other non-whites from living there, unless they were working as servants. And if you don't believe that, go to my blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I've blogged about this very story that I'm bringing to your attention now and have included links to some of my references. So that being said, you're a real class act, President Bush, a real class act. The joys of diversity for all of us peons, but an all-white neighborhood for you and your wife. Once again, George Bush proving he is just another hypocrite. To racial issues and the question of diversity and multiculturalism. These are the stories, these are the news items that only we in the political cesspool have the guts to bring you on the AM mainstream radio airwaves. You won't ever find Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, the pseudo-conservatives, talking about issues like this. This is why the political cesspool has become world-renowned. This is why we are number one, public enemy number one on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate watch list, because we tell the truth. They don't like the truth. We got to go to break, though. Some point. We got to go to break. We got a lot more coming on in the second hour. A lot more coming up. Paul Gottfried coming up in just a moment, and much, much more in the third hour. A lot of stories just like that one. We'll be back right after this, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go anywhere. Hang on.
Say, now think what the future would be with a poor boy like me. Don't go away, please go away. Oh, no, I know.
Can't decide what